Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 176.
Hurrah!
Hurrah! Don't know what that was.
No.
Let's just blame October.
Yes, let's do that.
The spirits are getting ever closer.
They're taking over, apparently.
And they're in this class. How are you, Nick?
I'm good. Holiday time.
Yes, you were off all week. Refreshed.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
Oh, it was so promising. And then
it
you
was so promising. Holiday.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's over soon.
Don't say that. Don't say that. Don't wish the holiday away. Be glad that it happened.
Well, yes.
Don't be sad that it's over. Be glad that it happened. And maybe the holiday carried you.
But it's been a delightful time.
Yes.
We've had some adventures.
We have. We went to Cornwall.
We went, yeah.
With that west. Emma.
With that there, Emma.
With that there, Emma. Went to the West Country.
Aye.
And it was lovely. It was really beautiful.
Delightful.
Oh, you know what? The air is fresher down there.
Less factories. Yeah. The smog.
We are surrounded by it. The tin mills.
Absolutely. The devil's mills belching out smog and smoke.
Match factories where all our children go to die. But down in the West Country is lovely.
It's lovely. It's lovely. It's delightful.
We had lots of adventures. We also did a lot of sitting.
Yeah, less adventures, more sitting I would have gone for.
No, I was just on the cusp. I was like, come on, we need to move at some point. I just went off in the woods one day.
I need to go and see a tree. Bye.
Yes, the tree and I had business to conduct.
I need to sit on this comfy sofa.
We did do a lot of sitting. There was a good wood burning stove.
I need to eat some cheese.
Oh, we ate a lot of cheese. It literally was like Christmas. We did treat it like Christmas.
It was very much like Christmas.
All we did was graze constantly on cheese and charcuterie.
Even that sort of beginning bit, going to the supermarket, was quite Christmassy. Because I have a rule of Christmas. Like, if you want it, fucking put it in the trolley.
Yeah.
And it was exactly like that. Oh, I don't care. Oh, I'll have some of that.
Yeah.
And some of that.
Look, the pâté. Pâté got into the trolley. We never have pâté.
Indeed.
Like pâté, but it was like, oh yeah, let's have some pâté.
Let's have some of that.
I got some honey butter almonds.
I know.
And they were delicious.
We had two types of cheesy biscuits.
Two, I tell you.
It was right fancy, it was.
It was lovely. And we did, trust us, darlings, we did get content while we were down there.
Yes.
So we had many adventures out on the moors, went out onto Bodmin Moor, and we told some scary stories. I went out on an adventure in the forest, and there may be some stories that emerged from that. Nick wasn't there, he doesn't know what
I wasn't there, I have no idea what's going on.
Yes.
She went in the forest, recorded something, came back with a haunted look.
So. Well, speaking of taking some time out to go west and coming away from the forest with a haunted look on your face,
yes.
I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Oh, we probably should. First of all, we have Moll. She's seen some shit. probably in a forest.
I need to prepare myself to say this name. Disarray Concord.
That's very good.
She knows the shit that Moll has seen.
Morgie's mom of three.
Nice.
I think.
Rosanna Lee. Oh my god, why are these all villains?
K.S. Claw. Oh, that isn't that. Oh, who's Inspector Gadget? Isn't it the Claw?
The Claw. The Claw.
Inspector Gadget.
What's his. Oh, we'll come back to this clearly. Yeah. Sorry, because we can't leave Kat Mulkerin waiting.
Absolutely not. Marvellous.
Delicious band of supervillains.
Supervillains.
Absolutely love it. We had fun on Patreon this week because the patrons were treated to a very special Deadly Nightcaps. When I say very special, I hope they found it special because it was sort of live. It was our live adventures in Cornwall.
It was.
As is our one.
Could you hear anything over the wind?
We did. It was fine when I was editing. We were worried about the wind a lot. It turns out it was absolutely fine.
It was
fine.
Windy.
It was very windy.
Well, apparently those little fluffy muffly things work then.
Yeah, they were great. Sorry, that's on the microphones, not Nick.
I am a you fluffy muffly thing.
A fluffy muffly thing.
Find me online. www.fluffymufflything.com.
He'll tell you tales.
Very reasonable rights.
But armed with those, we did go out into the wilderness. We told the story of some local murders, some weird stuff, some Arthurian legend as well, which patrons have already jumped in on, actually.
I got that wrong. It's fine.
To fill in the gaps, because it was a bit we went, what happened? Then, but it was great, and it was beautiful to be out in nature telling stories, which we really, really enjoyed.
Yes,
and
it was.
Emma jumped in as well.
Absolutely. Yes. I love driving to nature.
You like driving to
this
nature.
This is the best part of nature. I want to go see some nature, but it's over there. It's a long way away, nature.
You'd never think to walk there, would you?
Oh, God, no.
Because I'd hike there. I'd be out there. Hours, walk, 2 hours, absolutely fine.
Yeah, none of that.
No. You'd just be, no, 5 minutes, you're lying on the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Drive to the lovely thing. Go, oh, look, a lovely thing. Observe the lovely thing, comment on the lovely thing, admire and appreciate the lovely thing, get back into a warm car, drive to a pub.
I am more of the walk to the lovely thing that is near the lovely warm pub, and then I've earned my 7 pints and that taxi ride home.
See,
I'm not
we have the
back.
Same goal but different approaches.
Exactly, yeah. And they're both good.
They both work. So.
Well, if you want to know what the hell we're talking about, please consider joining us on Patreon if you haven't already. It is from but $5 a month. It helps to support this show. And for that, you get an extra episode every single week, as well as lots of bonus content and video content. And there's cocktail classes and there's chat and there's book club talk. This month, we're talking about Dracula. Oh,
yes.
My God. It's going to be lovely.
Must read it.
Find out more at patreon.com/thepoisonerscabinet. Well, Nick, are you ready?
Yeah, probably.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison. Or... we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
What's going on there? What's going on there?
You have to find out.
Can I not?
Cuffy, fuzzy, muzzy, cuffy.
Yeah, why not? Let's have a cocktail. Let's do that.
I keep taking the voice.
No,
it's
don't.
It's gone. I've lost it. Should we go with the first one?
Yay!
Yay! Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, but we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story, so his pick. And this week's secret ingredient is...
a prison!
A prison?
Or a jail.
Or a jail.
However you... prefer to term it.
However you prefer to spell it. There's many spellings of jail, isn't there? But a prison. Oh, okay, so that's brilliant.
And I'm surprised we hadn't had it before.
No, I know, because a lot of our tales end up
there. They do.
Good for spooky season, I think.
Well,
actually.
A haunted venue, potentially.
We love a haunted venue.
Yeah, indeed.
Prisons, we love a haunted
generally
venue.
Unpleasant things happen there.
They do. Haunted venues generally is a thing we talk about on Patreon, but if it bleeds into the main episode. Okay, well, with a prison as your inspiration, your ingredient, what have you come up with?
Well, we are having this week.
Okay.
We are going to have.
What? You're waving your head around.
This week.
Are you stalling for time or are you building up to a great big finale?
We are going to have.
Right.
This week.
This week.
This week.
Yeah.
We're going to have.
But when are we having this thing?
We're going to have it probably this week.
Okay.
And. We're having an Alcatraz.
Alcatraz. Yes. Alcatraz. Oh, a family. Never see a family again. No. Is there an Alcatraz? Right. If you're not an Eddie Izzard fan, this is meaningless. But also Alcatraz. Alcatraz, the famous prison in
it
San
is quite
Francisco.
Famous. Yes.
Yes. Inescapable. Totally is.
It totally is, apart from the people who escaped.
People who escaped in there. Are we going to Alcatraz this week?
No.
We're not.
No.
But we're honouring it.
We indeed, yes. Honouring it and Sean Connery, who was the only person who has escaped from Alcatraz.
In The Rock. I've been to Alcatraz. Have you been to Alcatraz?
I can't say I have, no.
I'm going to stop saying Alcatraz, actually.
Alcatraz.
No, I went there on my honeymoon.
What
not
fun.
Just that. Not, it wasn't just that.
How very romantic.
Wasn't my husband doing a series of bad, bad jokes of like, lock the wife up, shall I? No. No, we went to San Francisco. It was quite nice. We went there. It was very good. And I went Alcatraz.
Constantly, for hours and hours. And then everyone went, shut up.
And then took Ben outside. And it took me a good 10 minutes of coaxing him and said, just say it. Just say it. And he went, gentlemen, welcome to the Rock. And that was it. That was the best part of my honeymoon.
Best part, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what else we did.
I don't know. Yeah, what else?
No, I actually preferred Yosemite. Yosemite was lovely. This isn't relevant to anything.
No, really not, man.
But that was a forest, and I love a forest. There we are. Great.
All links. The whole world is circular. It all comes back.
Right. I think it is high time for us to break into the poisonous counted kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Oh, we did our time, didn't we, Nick?
Oh, we did. Dreadful, dreadful times. I've seen horrible things.
Terrible things. But we're outside now, haven't we? And we could use a beverage. And we have the Alcatraz. Oh, such horrible memories. Now, this is a distinctly brown drink.
Yeah.
Strangely brown.
Strangely brown.
No, it's very brown.
It's very brown.
It's got a big cube of ice in it. I don't think we've ever... Have we ever had anything this brown?
This brown?
I'm sorry I keep saying brown, but the brown drinks normally serve us well.
This one I'm slightly nervous about.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay then. Well, I guess we have no choice.
Well, indeed.
But to dive in, take our punishment.
Let's give it a go.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Okay. Ooh.
Actually...
Interesting. I don't. Ooh.
Mm.
That's a.
Ooh.
I don't know if I like that.
Mm.
But I can respect it. Instantly. Instantly.
Instant respect.
Is there coffee in this?
No.
Are you lying?
No.
No. How? But it tastes of coffee. I demand. I'll take another sip.
I quite like that. That surprised me.
It's got a medicinal quality to it.
Mm. Give me a guess. Give me a couple of guesses.
It's got smokiness to it.
It has.
Mezcal.
Yes.
I knew that though, didn't I?
You didn't.
You did check if there was mezcal.
Because I texted you and said, have we got mezcal?
Yes. Okay, so every now and then because the bottles are all stored here. But I don't know anything else.
But there's something else in there that I think is mezcal-ish in its...
Really?
Well, or the mezcal might be masking it, so you're not going to pick it up.
So it's mezcal-esque, but the mezcal may be masking it, so I've still no idea.
Yeah.
Good, good. Glad we got to the bottom of that. Yeah. Right, so I'm fucked, basically.
Not that.
Right.
Come on.
It is quite medicinal. So some sort of Amaro, maybe? Or like...
No.
Not an Amaro.
Not in this case.
Is there a Scotch?
There is not.
I really don't know. I don't know what the... What are the... Frickin' herby twigginess.
Give me a herby twiggy bitter thing.
Benedictine. No. Strega, but not really.
No.
Oh, God.
And you're going to kick yourself.
No, I'm not. It's not chartreuse, is it?
No.
Oh, the herby twiggy things. I know what they are.
Bitter.
The gentian. Is it? Is it the gentian?
Yeah, yes, it is.
What is that?
The
fucking sues every time, you bastard. Oh, but that doesn't explain the brown.
It doesn't explain the brown.
No, we got two white spirits in there, mezcal and sues.
Mezcal and sues.
So that's given the bitterness, but then there's something else. Chocolatey? Chocolate.
There is some chocolate bitters.
Oh, is it chocolate bitters?
Nice.
But what's the other brown? I'm sorry, I'm getting so excited.
There is still more brown.
Oh, fuck. Right.
There's two more things that you haven't identified.
Well, I don't think there's like a cognac or a brandy.
Nope.
Like a, this is great. This is brilliant content.
Brilliant, brilliant podcasting.
Oh, I'm going to take another sip. Hang on. What's brown? Why don't I remember anything that's brown? Why is this happening? I don't know. I don't know. Give me a hint.
I can't.
Don't say brown.
It's brown. It cannot be brown as well. There are many varieties.
A cacao?
No.
White brown?
No.
Rice? What?
So, yeah, I don't know.
Just rice. Just distilled down. Cannot be brown.
You can have non-brown versions or more ambery.
Amber?
Sort of more of an ambery colour.
Rum,
or brown.
Rum.
No.
Fuck off. What? Okay, I don't know.
Okay, sherry.
Fucking bollocksing shit.
That's a dramatic reaction, I think.
I know.
To sherry.
Really, though? is it?
Yes, there's sherry.
Sherry?
There's sherry in there, whereas the deep brown comes from the sherry.
Does it?
It does. Or the sherry's really gone off.
Because I don't think sherry's meant to be this colour, Nick.
And also tequila. Just
oh, there's an extra tequila.
Standard old tequila.
Why not?
Because mezcal is only, there's only half an ounce of mezcal in that.
Yeah, because it's not overly smoky.
So it's very small. But the body of the main thing is tequila.
Right. Ooh. So tequila is mezcal and then sherry?
Tequila, mezcal, bit of sherry.
I guess that's the kind of a colour of a sherry, but it's sort of cola coloured.
Yeah. It's a dark sherry.
So that is a bizarre combination.
It is an interesting combination.
On paper.
And I'm intrigued by it.
I thought,
is this really going to work? But actually,
mezcal, tequila and sherry. And then some chocolate in there. The chocolate's great.
I'm not a huge fan of the Sous. I figured it out that I don't overly like it.
Oh, yes, the Sous is in there, that bit.
But that's in there, and you can definitely taste that in the background, but it is...
Gives the bitterness.
It gives a little bit of a hint of a bitterness, but it's not overpowering like it can be.
The Sous I like in a white Negroni. I think we made it in white Negroni once, and I did like it. Since then, the Sous has disappointed us and let us down many times. Mm. I don't mind that. I can respect it for what it is, because the bizarre combination of ingredients has created something quite smooth and subtle.
That was interesting.
I'll tolerate it. I'm glad.
I'm glad.
I'll allow it.
Glad you'll approve.
I mean, I think it'll get you there at the end of the day. It's tequila.
Yeah, I mean, I have pretty much drunk, quite a lot of it.
I don't think that was wise, Nick.
Oh, look, words.
Your episode, right?
Well, indeed.
Okay,
let's
well.
See how it goes.
It's beguiling, like Alcatraz itself.
Is beguiling the word?
I always use the word beguiling. I don't know. I think it's
deadly. Confusing.
It's not strange.
Strange.
Bewitching. Bewildering.
Bewildering.
Well, but Alcatraz is like, you can't get out.
Is that bewildering?
Yeah. Can't work it out. Okay. It's a very complex system, actually, isn't it? It's actually very complex all this. If you'd been, then you'd have learned this, Nick. But you haven't gone because for some reason you hate Alcatraz.
For some reason, I just hate San Francisco.
Exactly. Okay. Well, with the Alcatraz firmly in hand.
Yeah.
Is it time for a story?
It is.
Yay.
It is. We're not going to Alcatraz.
No, let's not.
There's
sharks around Alcatraz.
There are. And also, I slightly regret it because I'm sure at some point in the future we'll do a story on Alcatraz and we'll go, shepherd on the cocktail.
But then that would give away what the story is.
Well, this is true.
And I always respect a cocktail that doesn't quite give it away.
So we're nowhere near Alcatraz.
Right.
We're not even on the same continent as Alcatraz.
So you just say the same planet.
We are on the same planet as Alcatraz.
Right. Space crime.
So, as people know, we have just come back from our Cornwall holidays.
Yay.
And on one of our outings, we visited Bodmin Jail.
Yay!
So Bodmin was once the sort of county town of Cornwall, where we were. So it has the dubious honour of hosting the sort of county prison. And it had been there for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yes.
So there's a Victorian jail that stands there now, which was built in a Georgian jail originally, which was built in 1779. They're very, very, very old.
Yeah.
Now, the prison itself is no longer a prison.
No.
Closed in 1927 and was left to fall into disrepair. Apparently, in the 30s, it was a nightclub.
Wow.
And they hosted mock executions.
Sorry, please make this episode all about that.
Which is like, okay.
Okay, let's... we're saying okay. Now, the more I think about it, that's very dark.
It's weird, yeah. So like, that didn't last. Apparently.
No, I can imagine it wouldn't.
And then it was left to fall to pieces.
Yeah.
Until in 2015, a Russian company bought it, who converted it over many, many years, spending billions of pounds.
Millions, dear.
Millions of pounds. And it's now a very, very fancy hotel.
It's stunning.
And it's really cool. Because they let us look in one of the rooms. It's like, that's really smart.
Yeah, we decided to go there. And the transformation of the jail is astonishing.
Oh, it's really smart. It's
as an
really,
attraction
really smart now.
And as the hotel, we went into one of the rooms, absolutely stunning. One of the places you walk away from and go, guys, just go.
It's £1 billion a minute, but just go. That's a hotel.
Is it?
It's quite pricey.
Oh, I didn't ask the price of the hotel. Yeah. The attraction is a bargain.
Like I think the rooms and hotels are like 300 a night sort of thing.
Really?
So it's quite pricey for a hotel.
Aww,
but alongside the hotel, they have got a fantastic museum they've opened and a whole attraction around Bodmin Jail and its history and sort of the history of crime and punishment across the sort of Victorian and Georgian eras.
Love it.
If you're in the West Country, it's well worth a visit.
Mm.
It's great. It's absolutely fantastic. And they've got this brilliant sort of like virtual They call it the Dark Walk, I think it was called.
Yeah, they developed it for Halloween. And I will point out, we're not sponsored by Bodmin Jail,
it was just,
by the way.
For £25 for a ticket, and it was fantastic. It was
we went there, we paid, and we loved it. I'm so glad you're doing an episode on it. I had no idea you were doing this. But the... Yeah, so for Halloween, they do a huge amount of things. They do ghost tours. They do after dark experiences. They do family trails that we saw. But we saw that they did this, the darker walk, which they say, this is the history of the jail, but this is going to talk about dark stuff.
Absolutely.
So scary stuff going on.
I think the VR experience. The whole VR thing at the beginning. Fantastic.
Stunning.
So impressive. And then a really knowledgeable sort of tour guide. So in memory of the lovely holiday we've just had.
Yay.
And for this week's episode, we are going to take a look at some of the people who ended up in Bodmin Jail and the crimes that they committed.
Hooray!
So first in our story, we are going to start with a rather sad case of Selina Wedge. Selina was born in 1858, and we know absolutely nothing of her childhood, except that it was in absolute poverty. She was utterly, utterly destitute.
That's very sad, but say the thing.
What thing?
Not much is
No.
Do the thing.
Do the thing.
Do the thing.
The people dance. Pay you to do.
Dance, monkey, dance.
Not much is known about her childhood.
Yay! He said it. Anyway, terribly sad.
What we do know is that by the time she's 28, when she next appears in sort of in the records, she is an unmarried mother of two illegitimate children.
Ooh.
John, who is age 6, and Henry, who is age about 2 years old. She's unable to find work due to having a young family, so she finds herself in and out of the workhouse. And this is about as far down on the sort of Victorian social scale as you could possibly get.
Yeah.
You are the lowest of the low, really.
Ooh.
In the summer of 1878, Selina starts to see a bit of light in the distance. She has started a relationship with a former soldier, a chap named James Westwood.
Ah.
Things seem to be going well with James, and there is a way out of this miserable situation that she is in.
If he's going to come along to a woman, I mean, 28, I'm sorry, at the time.
At the time, absolutely.
I'm assuming he knows about the kids?
One would assume he knows about the kids, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
When he knows about the kids. So they have agreed to meet in the town of Launceston on Saturday the 22nd of June in 1877. Ooh. On the Friday, the day before, Selina and her two children leave the workhouse and they hitch a ride with a local farmer, a chap called John Holman, to make the 8 mile journey to the town of Launceston in advance of this meeting with Westwood. We don't know what happens during this meeting, this rendezvous. We don't know what happens, but on Saturday Selina is seen around town and come sort of mid late afternoon she's seen making her way back to the workhouse as to where she is meant to be. But this time she only has one child with her. She only has the older boy, John, with her. Henry is nowhere to be seen.
Okay.
And when she gets back to the workhouse, the master there, Mr. Downing, quizzes Selina about what has happened to Henry. Why, you left with two children, you return with one child. What's going on there? And she tells him that Henry died in Launceston.
What?
There was some terrible accident. In Launceston, the infant died. terrible accident. His little body was left there.
Okay, this is disturbing.
Yeah, I told you it was a sad story. So I apologise for that. But murder is not always jolly. And so the master there goes, okay, he'll contact he knows people in Launceston, see if he can get some information about what's happened to the young lad. However, that evening, John, who is the older brother, the six-year-old, tells the workhouse nurses that Selina has put Harry in a pit. Put Harry in a pit, he says. Now, obviously, this sets alarm bells ringing. Oh. And the nurses tell the master of the workhouse, this is what young John has just said.
He said the baby's
in a pit. Selina is instantly summoned for questioning about what on earth this revelation mean. What is John talking about? And she tells them that her boyfriend James Weston, had taken Harry from her forcibly and drowned him in a well. And that he had threatened to kill her and the other boy, John, if anything was said. If she kicked up the smallest fuss, if she told anyone, he would come after her and her son. So she had apparently not accepted it, but had no choice but to go along with what she had been told. Now, obviously, the master, Mr. Downing, quickly informs the police about what he has uncovered, and a search is launched for the young Henry. Within a few hours, really, his body is found in 3 foot of water at the bottom of a well. Now, his body is retrieved and actually placed in front of Selina. She's actually confronted with the body of her young boy. And at the sight of this, she confesses. She alone was the one who had thrown her baby down a well. She had thrown the baby down the well. But, she says, James Westwood, her boyfriend, had insisted. He had demanded that Henry was no longer around. He was willing to take on one child.
But not two.
But he would not do two. If you get rid of the baby, I will marry you. I will take on your six-year-old. I'll give him my name, support him, all this. But the price of this is
the youngest.
I can't feed another mouth.
Oh, it's like Sophie's Choice.
It is a terrible, it is a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. Utterly devastating choice.
So, at first she said it's him who's done it.
At first she says it's entirely an accident. It's an accident. Something happened. My infant son died. Then she says,
No. But then, no, I did it.
He has killed. He took the child. He killed the child. Then, eventually, I did it. It was actually
on his insistence,
on his instruction, at his demand, that it was either me and my older son could survive. Of course, the police go and they track down James Watson and they say, "What the hell? This is the story that we've been told."
I hope they said that. What the hell?
What the hell's going on?
What the fuck, man?
What the fuck? Absolutely.
Yeah.
He strenuously denies any involvement. He says he has met Selina twice. I've only ever met her twice. There has never been any promise of marriage. Never been any ultimatum, anything like that. I have no idea what she is talking about.
He would say that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You're not going to go, yeah, absolutely, I made her do that. Selina is sent to trial. She has confessed to the murder of her child. So there is no way of escaping that. And she is sent to trial on the 27th of July, 1878. It takes the jury 45 minutes to reach a guilty verdict. Although the jury do recommend mercy.
Good.
On the account that she had previously, until this time, she had done absolutely everything to provide for the children. She had done, in her most desperate moments, the children had always come first, and she had provided for those children no matter what. So they say she's only come to this through the result of someone else.
Yeah.
She has made this choice. So they recommend mercy. Now the judge has no choice but to issue the death penalty, as is law. But he does write to the Home Office. The judge actually writes to the Home Office to request clemency. To request that these are exceptional circumstances this has happened in. Is there any way we can do something to mitigate this? The Home Office come back and say, nope. Nope, she has confessed.
All they have to do is go, she confessed. She confessed to being a child, she has to hang.
She has to hang, absolutely. She has to,
we can't give any leniency to it.
No, absolutely. So she, indeed, so the execution is scheduled to continue. So she's going to be executed on the 15th of August, 1878. While she's in the condemned cell waiting for her executioner date, she receives a letter from James Westwood. Begging her forgiveness.
Fuck off.
Absolutely begging for her forgiveness.
No.
The testimony he gave at trial. Selina doesn't respond to his letter. All she does is, it said, because she is now guarded by matrons and things in the run up to the trial, is that he has got a lot to ask forgiveness for.
Oh my God.
That's all she says about the matter.
So he's apologised for what he said in court?
He has asked for forgiveness. He doesn't explicitly apologise for what he says, because that would be relatively incriminating. But he asks for her forgiveness.
Oh! Oh my God.
And he also, and now that could be interpreted in multiples of ways when it comes to, oh, this, he sent me this letter asking for forgiveness. It's not going to change anything.
No, it's not going to change anything. But still, please beg a fucking condemned woman for forgiveness, for you clearly have some guilty conscience. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, please.
Yeah. So all she says is he has got a lot to ask forgiveness for. And that's all.
Oh my God.
All she remarks.
Dignity.
Indeed. Absolutely. Now, Selena is the first private execution at Bodmin.
Yeah.
So the fashion now for grand spectacles has come to an end.
Yeah,
Everything is now much more private. You don't get the crowds that one used to do. She's also the first person at Bodmin to be measured for the new long drop method of execution.
Marwood's.
Indeed, absolutely. Yeah, William Marwood himself is the one responsible for her execution.
Well, that is a small mercy.
Well, indeed. So now the new long drop method designed to provide an instant death by breaking the neck rather than the short drop, which had been traditional, which just left you there strangling for an hour or 40 minutes or whatever. So thankfully, there is some small mercy in that. Just before William Marwood pulled the lever, Selena spoke her last words.
Okay.
Lord, deliver me from this miserable world.
Oh, God. I don't like this story, Nick. So that I don't like Bodmin Jail.
So that was jolly.
Bloody hell. You got us in the feelings there, Nick.
Went straight in there with them. With something. Yeah.
Murder is not happy.
It's not. It's not always fun.
I know. And thank you for telling the story.
It's not always silly.
Wow. Jesus. Yeah. Oh, God.
So a desperate, desperate situation.
It's like Sophie's Choice. If you've seen the film. But what would you do if you're in this dire situation? There's no excuse. Everyone says, you know, there's no way that you could ever possibly make that choice. In completely different circumstances, this woman is faced with absolute destitution and she's looked after and loved her children. It does make me think he's killed it. He's killed the son. He's killed the son. And she's covered for him because he's like, if you cover for me, I'll get you off, or I'll do something. Mm. Or has she just lost her mind from depression, from anything? And has just made this terrible decision.
I think she probably did it, but on the understanding that her other son would survive.
Yeah.
Would live a life, would not a privileged life, but would live, grow into adulthood. And
would have far more of a life and than have she much could more ever opportunity give.
Than she would ever he would ever have.
That poor woman.
Terrible, terrible situation to be in.
But again, he says he only met her twice. He only met her twice and then sends her a letter begging for her forgiveness.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, everything he says is utter bollocks.
While you are about to hang, can you please forgive me so I feel better? Yeah. Well, we started things jolly.
Something jolly.
Glad we had a stiff drink.
Yeah, yeah. Good, isn't it? It's not going to get any better.
Buckle in, chaps.
Exactly. So next we're going to look at the case of Sarah Palgreen.
Okay.
Sarah Palgreen. Now, she is, again, is born into a poor farming family.
God damn it.
We're looking around 1780 at this point. Again, a fairly miserable start in life for Sarah. Her father is killed in an accident very soon after her birth.
What kind of accident?
I don't know.
Can we make it a fun accident?
A circus accident.
Right. Can we? I mean, I know death is fun. But
he was run over by a herd of elephants that escaped from the local circus.
And some tumbling clowns afterwards. Yes. And she went, this is really traumatic, but also...
A Ferris wheel escaped and just ran him down.
No, that's awful. That's terrible.
Unfortunately, yes. Father passed away.
Right.
Mother did not cope well. Yeah. With raising a family on her own, and is forced to give up Sarah when she is but four years old. And again, so Sarah is put in charge of the parish. She becomes a ward of the parish.
Right.
She is raised in the workhouse, really, until she leaves at the age of 10. Now, at 10, she cannot read, she cannot write, but she decides she needs to get out of Cornwall. She needs to get out. There's not
at
much... At 10. She's 10 years old. You're grown up at 10.
Okay.
You're an adult. Do what you need to do.
You're not. So 10 years old, off to make my fortune.
She's off to,
my bindle.
She decides, she needs to go. She's off to make her fortune.
Is she Oliver Twist?
She goes to London.
There we go.
She decided, no. I mean, that's a hell of a long way to go.
How the fuck does she get
from
there?
From Cornwall to London now takes you like 5 hours on the train. This is a
imagine
time
that
of
walking. Put it into
walking,
Google.
Yeah, walking, maybe hitching a ride on a wagon or
that
something
takes a
like
month.
That. Exactly, it's going to take you weeks to get there,
and
but she does it.
10.
But she does it absolutely, and she gets to London. So she gets to London. There, she's going to make her fortune. The streets are paved with gold.
They
don't
are
you
paved
know?
With gold.
It's paved with gold in London.
Yeah, it's very inconvenient. It's very slidey.
Yes, indeed. In London, she finds herself a nice soldier. A nice soldier husband in London.
Okay.
Yeah.
How old is she now?
So I don't know exactly, but I think she's sort of probably 14, 15.
Right. It took her 5 years to get to London.
Well, I think she... No. But I think she probably
No.
She didn't arrive in London and instantly get married. Walked through the gates, saw the first soldier that she clapped ties on, married him.
So. I mean, if you were 10 and you'd walked from fucking Cornwall, you'd be like, I don't care. I am to be wed.
Presumably, she spent a bit of time in London right. on various whatever jobs.
We're trying to find ways to make this not awful.
The soldier was horribly abusive.
Oh, Christ. Come on.
The soldier was not a nice man. No, he was not particularly pleasant. He was and it is soon clear that neither... I mean, Sarah's miserable, but also the husband is miserable as well. Yeah. They realise they have made a stupid choice.
Yeah.
This is not working out for either of them.
No.
So they do actually decide to amicably separate.
Amicably?
Amicably. In a sort of, well, because you don't get divorces at this point.
No.
She can't sue for a divorce or anything like
that.
Well,
they both decided.
And they both decided, this is not working.
Yeah.
We're both fucking miserable. Yeah. Let's go our separate ways.
I think she's got the edge on this one.
So they separate, and Sarah decides London was not all it was lived up to, all it was meant to be, really.
No.
And she returns to Cornwall.
Fuck.
Making another 5-year journey.
She's an old woman.
Back to Cornwall.
She gets back. It's always the way, isn't it? Yeah. It's always the way. You go to London. It's not what it
seems.
Yeah,
it's not
that great. The price of beer.
It's not what it seems. It's not what you imagine it to be.
She goes back to Cornwall. She was like, this is a fucking mistake.
So this is really bad.
Poor thing. All right, back to Cornwall.
So she's back in Cornwall.
Right.
And this time she meets a man called Henry Palgrave.
Okay.
Henry seems nice. Much better than Drunken Sailor Boy. Back up in London. Mm-hmm. Henry's nice. He's got a job. It's very exciting.
Okay.
He works. He earns some money.
What's his job?
I don't know.
Right.
But he has one.
He ran a circus.
He ran the circus that had the elephants that killed the father.
I've been waiting for you for many years. Sorry.
The couple are married. Everything's going to be lovely. It's going to be nice and delightful and jolly. They're going to have a big family, live in Cornwall, have a nice farmhouse, and
lovely. They're going to be
happily ever after.
And...
Exactly. No, 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 no. Henry's not so nice either.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Henry's not so nice either. He is an alcoholic, basically. And he's also a deeply jealous man. Who Sarah talks to the postman and he flies into a rage.
Oh, Christ.
About her infidelity with the postman. The vicar pays a visit and he flies into a rage about the odd look that the vicar gave his wife.
I'm not surprised vicars are randy back then. Yeah. Don't trust a vicar. The postman's just doing his job.
So, yeah, so he is not a pleasant, pleasant man. Mm. The couple don't have any children as well, which is something something that he puts down to. Well, he's got a dud wife.
Really,
He's got a dud wife. I'm not having any children.
Or is it just because you're pissed?
Exactly. No mention is made of the fact that he's pissed 90% of the time. No consideration that could possibly be him having an issue. And of course, now he's just got a broken wife who can't get pregnant, who can't provide him with a family. So he gets bitter and angry and twisted.
Does he actually know how to have sex? Is this
well,
why he's jealous
I haven't
all the
asked
time? Is this it? He's just like, no, he's going to want to do the sex with you. I definitely know how to do it. Humping a table leg. Like, yeah.
Sarah, in 20 years of a pretty grim, miserable life.
Okay.
Until the summer of 1820.
Huh.
Something happens in that summer.
Oh.
Something happens and Sarah snaps. Something that pushes her over the edge.
Yeah, likely.
Yeah. So whether it's just been the continuous build-up of so many things over so many years or a particular event spurred this on, we don't know. But she decides she needs to do something. She needs to act. On Saturday the 15th of July, she takes a trip to the apothecary. In Penzance.
Marvellous. Oh, in Penzance.
In
I bet
Penzance.
It's fancy.
The apothecary in Penzance and purchases a quantity of arsenic.
Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! Arsenic alarm! Yes! I was wondering if we'd get to some arsenic in this.
Supposedly to deal with the rat infestation that they have at the house. That's what she writes in the book. Rats.
Can she write?
Big.
But just scratching
she,
it out.
That's what she tells the chap, and the chap writes rats.
Just writes rats. Just yeah. Any other follow-up information, just rats, just walking out. There is not a single time where I don't hear the name Penzance, and I don't think there's pirates.
There's definitely pirates. She had to escape the pirates, and it was all very dramatic, but she got out with her arsenic. She gets home, she takes the arsenic, and she mixes it in with some nice butter.
Ooh.
Everyone loves a bit of butter.
Could have had butter as the ingredient.
Couldn't have.
Yeah.
But then my ingredient links all the stories together.
Oh, okay, fine.
This is just one story.
This is one story.
It's one story.
Okay, but I like butter.
Yes, who doesn't? Okay. not with arsenic in, though.
No.
So she's mixed in her arsenic with some butter and spread the butter on her husband's bread.
Sorry.
Arsenic butter bread.
Just the way you said bread there.
Bread.
You just... Bread. We don't have time for extra fucking vowels. Oh, we'll need more drink in a minute. I say it again, but normally...
She spread the butter on her husband's bread. He falls ill pretty much immediately.
Ooh.
Falls ill. Desperate, as we know. Arsenic, stomach cramps, unpleasantness, vomiting, rah. Purging. All horrible. She calls the barber, as one
Why?
Does. Well, the barber is there. The barber, we need to bleed him. We need to get
he
the bad,
has a razor.
We need to get the bad humours out. Well, who else do you call to bleed someone?
The fucking doctor.
No, don't have any doctors around
the
here.
The wise woman.
Call the barber. He'll do like minor surgeries.
Well, I guess.
Fine.
I guess he would.
Yeah, just need him make a few little cuts, get the bad blood out.
Yes.
Then he'll be fine. He'll be fine.
Purge of the humours. The barber turns up. Not
barber turns
what
the
up. Hell is going on.
Gets a shave at the same time.
To shave the face.
Henry seems a little better.
Okay.
He seems a little better, a little bit better.
Yeah.
But dutifully, Sarah is there, always at his side, always at his bedside, with a seemingly endless supply of bread and butter. Got to keep up his strength.
Soak up all the badness.
Exactly. Yeah. So nice supply of bread and butter. Henry died on the 10th of August.
Okay.
Around 3 weeks after Sarah had first fed her husband an arsenic sandwich.
Clever girl, though. Yes, no, little and often.
Little and often, little and often. Little and often. So spread it out a bit, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. There's only the barber there who doesn't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah. Fortunately, it's not quite as clever as she thought it was going to be.
Oh, shit.
Because pretty much straight away, people are suspicious.
Really?
About, well...
cholera? Oh, actually...
Well, we're not talking London here.
No.
We're not talking the slums of London. We're talking rural... Sort of
very good point.
Yeah, sort of. There's fresh air. There's fresh water. Yeah. And all this. This is so. Yeah, cholera is not really a thing.
No, that's a very good
there.
Point. Normally, you could just blame it on cholera.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, not really around here. This is all very rural, and your water's from the well and stuff like that.
Mm.
So yeah,
Lyme disease, fine.
So it's like, well, yeah, it seems a bit dodgy, and there's obviously there's no history of illness or anything like that for. No one else in the area has come down with this affliction at all. So people go, doesn't help
right.
that it is well known that this is not a happy marriage.
Okay.
This is not a happy marriage. Henry is not a very nice man. People know this.
Well, but come on, let her get away with it. The first busybody is out there pointing the finger at her.
Oh, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, over the years, Sarah has not been shy in coming forward about saying how much she hated her husband.
Well, fair play.
Yeah. Well, indeed. But people remembered that. People remembered...
You're meant to be godly and everything.
People remembered that, well, she always hated him. She's always hated him. Now he's died in sort of like... It's a bit weird that he's just dropped dead. He fell ill and then 3 weeks later he's dead. He's like, well, it's a bit weird. So people are suspicious.
Mm.
And while people may well have had their sympathies towards Sarah's plight, it's just not the done thing to murder your husband.
No,
it's just
not the done thing.
An examination is carried out on Henry, and it is confirmed that he has been killed by ingesting arsenic. Sarah is arrested straight away. During the trial, witnesses do come forward and say they have heard Sarah threatened to poison her husband in the past.
Oh.
People think at the time it's just like, it's just conversation. It's just sort of like, it's an idle threats that people make when someone's pissed them off or whatever.
Yeah, I'll poison you.
I'll poison you to death, horribly.
I'll choke you and stab out your eyes.
Yeah. Or some reports also claim that Sarah has fallen in love with another man.
Sure.
There's another man on the team, a sailor named Yorkshire Jack. and that she had poisoned her husband so she could be with him.
Yorkshire Jack does not exist.
Some reports treat that as gospel, is absolutely true.
That is some gossip and, who's making something
and
up.
That Yorkshire Jack, she actually requested that Yorkshire Jack escort her to the gallows.
Oh,
and
right,
some other reports mention nothing of him at all.
Yeah.
So who knows?
A bit gossipy.
Whether Yorkshire Jack actually ever existed.
That's someone who says she was seeing another man. What was his name? Jack? What was his surname?
He's from Yorkshire.
You wouldn't know him. He lives in Canada.
But, I mean, Sarah on the stand does not deny killing her husband.
Fair enough.
She blames her situation on her lack of education, her difficult childhood. She describes her husband's jealous and controlling behaviour. Mm. Obviously, it doesn't help.
No.
It's not going to excuse what she's done or make any difference to her sentence. She is convicted of killing her husband, and she is sentenced to hang. But not only that, the judge also decrees that her body will be sent to London for the anatomists.
Ooh!
For dissection. So this would ensure that she is never going to make it to heaven. Because one needs an entire body to be accepted in the resurrection and all that sort of malarkey. If your body's in cabinets and jars and things around the country being stared at by students, that ain't happening. So she is eternally damned.
I mean, it's a bit poison, the cruelest of crimes.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, women doling that out. Oh, how underhand and awful.
Awful.
Because people are terrified by it.
Awful, awful, awful. She is executed at Bodmin Jail on Saturday the 12th of August, 1820. Which only 2 days after her husband's death.
Jesus!
So that's a speedy turnaround.
They must have been lying in wait for her. What was she saying?
He's dead. She says some dodgy stuff. Into court. She's guilty. Death.
Death. Death. Death to all. She must have been shouting about that a lot. I mean, like, awful circumstances and terrible lot in life. That's very sad. But also, she's probably skipping through the streets going, he's dead. He's dead. I killed him. Yes,
she didn't deny it. On the stand, and when questioned, she doesn't deny it.
Well, okay, fair.
She tries to give reasons as to why she did it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that doesn't help. But she doesn't go, no, it wasn't me, I have no idea.
But give it a minute, love.
But, I mean, yeah.
she shouldn't be hanged, but she should be punished for her crime if she's killed someone. But also, you know, give it a minute. You might have had a few weeks, love, of peacefulness. Okay.
That's the show. Before we start our last story, should we have a quick break?
Oh, let's have a beverage.
Let's have a beverage.
Cool.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Nick, we have our drinks.
We do!
We've replenished.
Hurrah!
It's been a traumatic ride.
It's been an emotional journey.
It's been an emotional roller coaster. Let's say it.
We have one more tale.
Ooh.
Tale of skullduggery for you.
Okay.
And we're going to take a look at the Lightfoot brothers.
Oh, the Lightfoot brothers!
William and James. Now, William and James, they are born Bodmin surrounding areas to John and Elizabeth Lightfoot.
Just around Bodmin.
Around Bodmin.
The Bodmin surrounding areas.
Not in the town, but out in the sticks somewhere.
Around Bodmin.
Around Bodmin, that's what I said.
You said Bodmin surrounding areas.
The areas that surround Bodmin.
Okay, fine. Just don't be a cartographer. That's all I ask. All right, but they're out there.
They're out there.
They're not in fucking Bodmin.
In the areas surrounding Bodmin. Not in Bodmin.
No.
Not in other places.
Nope. But just on the edge.
Surrounding bits.
Ooh, just there.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. William was born in 1804, and James follows in 1817. As the brothers got older, both started work as general labourers, really. Uh-huh. Working in fields, working in the forests, whatever they need to do. Long hours, hard work, whatever odd jobs they can find. Mm-hmm. It is while they're working in Pencarrow Woods that they get chatting to one of the other labourers there. Now, this chap suggests that there's actually a much, much, much easier way to earn a living than through backbreaking physical labour.
Yeah. Yeah.
If only you've got to have the guts to do it. You've got to have the guts to follow through, but you can make a fortune.
Ooh.
He goes on to detail how he believes the men could enrich themselves.
Okay.
By stalking the moor. By robbing unsuspecting travellers across the moor.
It's never prostitution, though, is it? No,
not for the brothers.
Money down
if
the
If they
docks.
Were sisters, maybe.
Hey, oh, there is a trade for gentlemen, I will have
I'm
you know.
I'm sure. In Bodmin, such things would happen in Bodmin.
They're crying out for it, sir. If you're willing to follow through, sir.
Perhaps there are too many of them in Bodmin already.
Exactly. Absolutely. Overrun.
The competition is overwhelming.
So just, you're better off robbing people, honestly. Right. I love the idea of them stalking the moors. Absolutely. Like creepy steps, creepy.
Now, the brothers have grown up on the moor, so they know it out the back of their hand.
Yeah.
Really, they know all the little paths and passages and ways through.
And you would need to know, because it is a huge place.
Huge, scary place. Absolutely. Now, I mean, travellers, they are going to stick to the predetermined tracks that there are. You do not dare go off piece into the wild landscape. You're going to get completely lost. You're going to get dragged down into a bog somewhere, or end up falling off a cliff, like a sheer rock face or something, and you're not going to end well.
No.
If you try and make your own way across this,
yeah, the
really
beast is
bleak,
out there.
And the beast is out there. The beast of Bodmin is stalking. So yeah, everyone sticks to the main tracks. So if you do know your way around, if you know the little shortcuts and little passages. Ooh, you can get around.
Absolutely.
Really
yeah.
speedily, and no one is going to know.
Yeah.
So the more the brothers think about this, they go...
We've got the edge here.
Yeah, exactly. We've got the edge. This could work.
Mm.
Anyone on these sort of really quite lonely, isolated roads are easy pickings, especially at night.
Yeah.
Especially at night, if they're travelling in the dark, they think, well, we can ambush our target, we can take whatever we want, and then disappear. Disappear. Onto the moor.
Yeah.
No one is going to try and give chase.
Yeah.
Because if they do, they're screwed. They're never going to find their way back to the road again, and they'll probably end up dying out on the moor somewhere.
Of exposure,
falling off something into a hole.
Beast's
going to get them.
You stray off in the dark. What, 10 feet? 15
Absolutely.
Feet? You're lost.
Yeah.
You're lost. You don't know where you are. You've no light.
There's no road lights illuminating the tracks and all this sort of stuff.
If you don't have a match and a candle or anything, you are absolutely screwed.
It's a long
journey across those moors.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's cows.
And there's cows and sheep and beasts.
Yeah.
And all sorts of unpleasantness going on out there. So they thought, fine, let's do it. And it works. Under the cover of darkness, they strike. They will go for any lone traveller walking or riding along these roads, fill their pockets with whatever loot they can, and then just disappear onto the moor, never to be seen again. And they do it quite well for many months. obviously these crimes are reported. Mm. Once the traveller gets to the end, they get to the next town or village. Yeah, it's reported. The I've been robbed. This has been taken. That's been taken. What do they look like? Dark. They had a mask. Where do they go? Onto the moor. Away. Like, not a lot to go on, is it?
Someone's just going, it was very sexy. I couldn't really see him, but he had an air about him. Yeah. He disappeared like the mist. Like, imagine the police at the time kind of going like, where was this crime committed? On the moors. Instantly no help. Yeah. Instantly no.
Whereabouts on the moor?
Near the rock.
Near, yes, there was a big rock. There was a particular boggy bit of bog.
The Grimpen Mire. You must know it well. That's in Dartmoor. Shut up.
In February 1840, Cornish merchant, a chap called Neville Norway, is in Bodmin on business. At some point, now whether in a store or an inn or such like, William Lightford spots Neville. Or more precisely, he spots Neville's purse and seems to notice that it contains a great deal of gold and silver coins. I mean, there's a lot of jangling about. So it's like, ooh, that's someone with some cash going on there. Big old money purse there, full of shiny, shiny coins. Now, William loiters around for a bit, and he's able to discover that, Neville is actually, he's shortly to leave Bodmin for his home in Wadebridge, which is about 9 miles away across the moor. Now, William goes to find his brother, goes to find James, and tells him what he's learned. There's this chap travelling by himself. It's the middle of the night. He's got a huge bag of cash on him. It's easy money. It's absolutely easy money.
I saw his purse. It was huge. Also, he has a lot of cash.
Also, he's got a lot of cash. It is too good an opportunity to miss, really. So the brothers, they know exactly which path Neville is going to be taking to get to Weybridge. They leg it. They to get ahead of him. And to
shortcut
set
the,
their trap.
The moors.
Ooh, really. Around 10 o'clock that evening, Neville leaves Bodmin. Mm-hmm. Now, he's made this journey numerous times before, so it's not unknown to him. He knows exactly where he's going. He's obviously quite comfortable at travelling at night through the moor. This time, he's in the company of a chap called Abraham Hambly. They both leave Bodmin together. As they ride, they meet another chap, Ralph Tinney, who is heading in the same sort of direction. So the three of them are going along this path.
Excellent names all the way through. Yeah. This like Neville Norway, who was doing business in Bodmin.
At some point along the route, the men part company. They go their own ways, leaving Neville Norway riding alone across the moor.
Where are the other two going?
Well, they're going to different places.
Like the tiny, tiny path.
There's little crossroads or something like that, and they're all going to their own homes.
Just wandering different into villages. The moors, like, well, goodbye.
So, I don't think they know where they're going.
Well, you'd hope. So, they're never heard from again.
Now, not long after Neville and his companions had left Bodmin, we're probably like an hour or so later, another two men, John Hicks and Christopher Bowen, they also leave Bodmin heading towards Weybridge, so travelling on the same sort of path. Now, as this pair, they ride along, they see a horse just trotting back up the road towards them, a riderless horse, grey horse. It's saddled and it's bridled. So obviously it belongs to someone. It's not just a wild pony from the moor. So they grab the horse's rein and take it, go back up the trap. As you say, thinking someone has been thrown from the saddle or needs help. We should take the horse. We should go and find out what's going on. Absolutely. As they go along towards Weybridge, they don't find anyone obvious on the track or anything like that. They get into Weybridge and they meet another chap who's just milling around the place. And they tell him that we found this horse. It must belong to someone. And this chap recognises it. No, this horse belongs to Neville Norway. Now, John Hicks, one of the guys, he knows where Neville lives in Weybridge. So he goes straight to his house and he finds one of Neville's wagoners, a chap called Thomas Gregory, who's working in the stables at the time. Now, he absolutely recognises, this is Neville's horse. He left this morning to Bodmin on this horse. Where the fuck is he? he should be with this horse. Yeah. As they look sort of over this animal, perhaps they see if they can find anything. Is there a note or whatever? They are alarmed to discover what look like fresh bloodstains on the saddle of the horse.
Ooh.
Now they're seriously worried that something has happened. So they alert the household staff. Neville's got numerous people working for him. Mm. And they're all called out to form a search party. A group of men set out onto the moor in search of the missing Neville. Now, in the meantime, say, chap John Hicks, he sets off to find the local physician. Now, he's going to alert the doctor. Dr. Trehane Simmons Tickle.
There's so much I have to ask about that. Also, what the fuck happened with his first name there?
Trehane.
Trehane?
Trehane
is how you Simmons. Said it.
Trehane.
Trehane.
Simmons.
He's an elegant man from the south. Simmons Tickle. It's a Mr. Tickle.
Mr. Dr. Tickle, I have you, thank you. Dr. Tickle, thank you.
It's exactly what he'd say to people. Like, Mr. Tickle, no, Dr. Tickle, I'm allowed to do this, clear you.
So he alerts Dr. Tickle.
Dr. Tickle, right.
Who is now on standby waiting for an injured Neville to return with his fingers. And
I'm sure he was a credible physician who Absolutely. Had fought prejudice all his life about his name. Anyway, he's on standby.
He's on standby.
We need to leave him behind because otherwise we'll never get on with this story.
Yep, John then leaves him, heads back onto the moor to assist in the search. Just before midnight, Neville Norway's body is discovered. Lying on his back in a small stream just off the road, about 2 miles outside Wadebridge. So he has made it 7 miles, so close to home. Now, Neville's body is gathered up and returned to Wadebridge for examination. It's sent to his house. There, his clothes are removed and his body is checked for evidence. They quickly realise that he's been stripped of anything of value. Oh, yeah. His purse, his jewellery, all that has gone. Dr. Tickle arrives to carry out his medical examination and he quickly identifies a cause of death as several severe fractures on the left side of Neville's skull that have been caused by a heavy blunt object. This is not a man who has been thrown from his horse and landed on the ground and injured himself. This has been a deliberate, violent attack.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the doctor's belief that any one of the blows would have been fatal, but there have been several
just
administered.
Several savage attacks.
But yeah, any one of them would have been sufficient to cause a death.
Why have they... Well, yeah, well, yeah. What, why kill him? You know?
Well, for stuff. Yeah. All his purse of fancy shiny coins is gone. His jewellery is gone.
I suppose I'm just wondering if there's been deaths beforehand. But I mean, he's dead.
He is definitely dead. I mean, the doctor also notes sort of several cuts and bruises to Neville's face and his hands, which he thinks, well, they could have potentially have been sort of defensive wounds.
Yeah.
Or they could well have been caused when his body was obviously dragged from the road across stony ground into the river. But yeah, there are lots of other injuries to his person. Now, while the doctor is doing his thing in the house, a group of men who found Neville and now Neville's brother, William Norway, they return to the murder scene. So we're now looking at about 2 a.m.
Yeah, it's dark.
Now, so it's pitch black. Obviously, they've all got their lanterns and such like that. But they're desperate to try and identify anything, to try and find any clues. Yeah,
and
anything
you know,
that
it's
they
like
can help.
Open to the elements, you know, you could lose.
Yeah,
you know, some evidence.
And these are his friends.
Yeah.
This is his brother and his friends who want to know what the fuck's happened to Neville.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're out there with their lanterns. They get to the scene. They discover his hat not far away. They also discover on the riverbank what look like 2 sets of footprints scrabbling up the bank and then disappearing into the moor. So it leads them to conclude, okay, there were 2 people involved in this altercation. They also find the hammer from a pistol.
The hammer from a
gun. And now they know Neville's not been shot at all, so if the attackers had been armed, obviously something's gone very awry for the hammer to fall off their gun.
A piece of the gun has fallen right.
The gun is disintegrated in the hands or something.
Well, maybe.
But something's gone very wrong, but it's obviously freshly dropped. Over 3,000 people attend Neville's funeral.
Aww.
The great and the good from across the county turn up to pay their respects. He's obviously a very well-respected, very well-liked man. He leaves behind a wife and 6 children. So yeah, thousands of people turn up to pay their respects, and the pressure is on the local police to find what the hell has happened to Neville. The day after the funeral, the newspapers announce a £200 reward that has been put up by local government. The advertisement also states that a pardon will be granted to any accomplice not being the actual perpetrator.
Oh, okay.
So if you were
in the
gang,
yeah.
If you were there and you witnessed it, come forward.
No question, Jack.
Tell us who struck the blow and you will be pardoned.
Like it.
Which is, yeah, cunning. Cunning indeed. Now, because he was a high-profile man, it ensures that the case is never far from the papers, and it is always at the front of people's minds. One chap, the local reverend, Reverend William Molesworth, he is absolutely horrified that one of his flock could be responsible for such a vicious act, and himself decides to turn detective. The reverend uses his own bloodhounds and goes to the scene of the crime to try and pick up a scent across the moor. And his bloodhounds, yeah, they pick up something, and mm-hmm. they lead him on. But unfortunately, there is another river, and they lose. they lose the trace.
I bet the bloodhounds did nothing.
Goes cold.
And he blamed it on the river. He blamed that on the river. Come on, boys, let's go. Right, you've led me to some bones. Okay.
It is remembered as the first time the bloodhounds have been used in a criminal manhunt in England.
Not well.
Not successfully. Not well,
but they were there.
They were there. They tried it.
They seemed enthusiastic.
They were enthusiastic. They went for it.
Okay, that would be interesting to look up, actually, how many bloodhound investigations have actually led to successful convictions or finding the criminal, I guess.
So this was the first, apparently. That's good. I like that. Around a week or so after the murder. It's now, it's still every day in the papers. Who killed Neville?
They've got no other news reports.
Yeah, exactly. Reward. Shoemaker John Harris, he goes to the magistrate. Something's been niggling in the back of his mind. Something he just can't shake. It's probably nothing, but fine, I'll come. I'm going to tell you anyway, see what's happening. On the night of Neville's murder, he had seen William and James Lightfoot on the road. They had been on the road, they hadn't been heading anywhere. They hadn't been like travelling in one direction. They'd just been hanging around. They'd just been loitering, sort of like in the shrubbery. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, that's weird. Mm-hmm. You're obviously not going to anywhere or from anywhere. Yep. You're just bleh. Yep. So he goes to the authorities and he tells them what he's seen. Now, the constable who had been drafted in to investigate this thought it odd that John should mention James Lightfoot. Because he's also received a report from a chap called Richard Ayres, a butcher, who lived next door to James Lightfoot, who had said, well, on the night of the murder, James got home very late. Very late that night, and then had a screaming row with his wife, which woke them all up, which is why he remembered it. It was a, screaming. The wife was crying, he was yelling. Now, at the time, the constable thought, well, it's just a married couple fighting of an evening. That's not weird.
None of my business. Really, it might be.
Yeah, but now he knows that James has been out late in the night looking dodgy on the road just hours before the death. He goes, oh, no, that's weird. The police search James's cottage, and hidden in a ceiling beam, they find a pistol. A pistol with a missing hammer.
Why would you keep it, you fool?
Yeah, not the brightest of moves.
Yeah, better keep this.
Yeah, throughout the search, James, he just looks nervous. He just looks shifty and uncomfortable and, yeah.
Dr. Tickle's coming for him.
He goes straight in with, I have no idea how that got there. No idea. I've never seen it before. No idea how that got there.
Bollocks, mate.
Yeah. He is taken into custody on the 14th of February.
Valentine's Day.
3 days later, his brother William is also arrested.
Nice.
Now, under questioning, confessions pour out of them both. And each accuse the other of landing the fatal blow. Brother against brother.
Yeah.
Saying, both say, it had never been their intention to kill Neville Norway, but he fought back. He refused to hand over his valuables. He decided to resist them. They had no option.
They had
no option but to kill him. James goes on to detail the great many other robberies that they had committed when no one had died.
See, we didn't kill anyone then.
Exactly.
These should be taken into consideration.
So, we never mean to kill anyone. We never killed anyone before. We've robbed all these other people. We didn't kill any of them.
Yeah. Oh, shit. That's what I was asking earlier on. I was like, they haven't killed anyone else.
No.
Don't use that as your character reference.
No, they've robbed loads of people. We didn't kill any of them. This is just a one-off. It was a mistake. Won't do it again. Honest governor.
No, it's not how it works.
Yeah.
Not how it works.
On the 30th of March, 1840, the Lightfoot brothers are tried at Bodmin Jail. They are charged with the willful murder of Neville Norway. Now, the courthouse is packed with spectators wanting to catch a glimpse of these brothers who have done this vicious, vicious thing. They want to hear all the gruesome details. Mm. We want to know exactly what's going on there. Neither men deny the murder. No one says, no, not me, Gov. But they insist that the other was responsible.
Yeah.
James testified that he had threatened Neville with the pistol. He had threatened like a stand and deliver sort of situation. Yeah. And he tried to fire a warning shot.
Yeah.
But when the gun had failed to fire and had disintegrated in his hands, leaving a hammer on the floor, he had actually gone over and started beating Neville with the butt of the pistol, causing some of the injuries to his face. But Neville was still, no, I'm not giving you my stuff. Not giving you my stuff. It had been William then who were growing impatient at Neville's defiance, who had come in, swung the club, and delivered the fatal blow. William, on the other hand, claimed almost exactly in the same in reverse. According to some newspaper reports, William certainly seemed the more remorseful of the two men on the dock. He tried to not to give excuses, but to reason why he had ended up in such a situation. They had been led astray by bad company. They had been tempted by others to take the easier way out. It was someone else's responsibility that I have ended up in this situation. The jury took less than 5 minutes to return a guilty verdict. Out, sandwich, back in.
Quick sandwich.
So, quick sandwich. The judge sentences them both to be hanged at Bodmin Jail. After sentencing, both brothers are put in the same cell. Perhaps they think that, well, they're gonna reconcile.
Or
they're
beat
gonna
each other to
they're
death.
Gonna leave this world as brothers. No, indeed, they try and beat the crap out of each other. Yeah. They start arguing, fighting, blaming each other for their predicament, and they have to be separated. On the 13th of April, 1840, 21,000 people gather around Bodmin Jail to witness the execution of the Lightfoot brothers, who die side by side on the scaffold. So that is the end of our sort of trilogy of crimes from Bodmin.
Oh,
in spite of, there were many, many other people who were executed at Bodmin Jail and who did terrible, horrible, horrible things.
Hey.
And maybe we shall come back to them at some point.
Maybe we shall.
Maybe we shall.
It's an endless resource.
Indeed. But three is enough to be going on with.
A trilogy of terror. Love Indeed. It. The Tales of Bodmin Jail. Love it, Nick. Fantastic. Oh, we covered everything. We covered highway robbery and murder. We covered arsenic. We had
a
some
bit of
poison.
Arsenic in there.
And we had some traumatic child
some
death.
Really, really sad things.
Yes, really sad things. I mean, Bodmin Jail is a great place and is famously the most haunted venue in England. Now, it tries to lay claim
many,
to it.
Many places lay claim to
of
that.
Of course it does. We say this about every single place. But Bodmin Jail is reportedly one of the most haunted places
Indeed, yes.
in England. That's why there's ghost hunts there. Dear Emma from Real Life Ghost Stories has been there. She will go back. She has stories to cover about Bodmin Jail, about the supernatural element of it. There's a big bit of the supernatural history of Bodmin Jail all around the beast as well. The beast of Bodmin Moor that stalks and also apparently attacked prisoners when they were trying to escape. There are ghosts that stalk all of the corridors and hallways. So very appropriate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, indeed, the Lightfoot brothers are meant to haunt the jail.
Yeah, they are chasing people.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
And the cries again of Selena Wedge, again, her cries are heard. But yes, a haunted venue, so perfect for spooky season, but lots of delicious, delicious crime at a fabulous jail. There's a lot of history as well about the establishment of jails where you go like, so Georgian versus Victorians. Really interesting,
it's very
actually.
Interesting.
It is really interesting. You have to go through this whole time period where you can go into a cell and like, yeah, there would have been like 6 million people in here. There would have been a lot of people in there. And then it's suddenly like, one. Like, Bodmin Jail was one of the first places that had
single cell occupancy.
Can you imagine the luxury? If you'd ever been in jail before.
You don't get that now.
No, you don't get that now. The luxury of having a bucket in the corner. Lovely. Those are the tales of Bodmin Jail. What do you think, people? Do you know more stories from Bodmin Jail, from this wonderful part of the UK? Or do you know more stories of other jails, hauntings or terrible, terrible crimes that we could cover, or more haunted venues as we edge towards Halloween? We do love a haunted venue.
Oh, yes.
And that is now the phrase that we will use until the day we die. Any other prisons that we should cover in the future? Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode. Share your thoughts, your theories, your feelings, your musings. But as you're musing about future stories, most importantly, you must mix up the Alcatraz.
The Alcatraz.
Now, the Alcatraz went down well.
Yeah, well, yeah.
We finished it.
We finished it, absolutely.
It was. I'm still going to stick with beguiling. I was foxed by it.
You go for it.
It was a misty mistress. Yeah,
it's an interesting one. Yeah. Interesting one. Am I going to rush out and make it again? Yeah.
I wouldn't object if it was served to me at a bar.
No, well, indeed not.
I'm thinking like a smoky kind of cigar bar or kind of like a speakeasy sort of, sort of vibe.
Go with that.
It's interesting. If the ingredients will be out.
Indeed they shall.
And they're bizarre. If you have them, mix them up and tell us what you think. Please share pictures of cocktails you are enjoying wherever you are in the world and send us more suggestions of things we can be doing or enjoying for spooky season because the time is upon us. If you haven't already, please join us on Patreon and leave us a review on Apple iTunes. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisonous cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are... trying to kill you.
Bye.